President Duterte hints at possibly running for vice president next year. The Philippines police chief warns of digital vote buying in the upcoming elections. President Duterte wants face shields used only in hospitals. We'll tackle that as well as calls for the easing of quarantine restrictions for returning overseas workers with infectious diseases expert Dr. Ronchin Solante. And Manila's labor chief backs the deployment of more Filipino healthcare workers abroad. The head of the Philippine Nurses Association will join us later on in the program. Hi, I'm Carmina Constantino. Dateline Philippines begins right now. Hey, thanks for joining us. And for those of you watching us on YouTube and on Facebook, nice to have you with us today. We're going to begin with this story. For the first time, President Rodrigo Duterte agrees with calls for him to seek the vice presidency next year. Just recently, the chief executive said he plans to retire after his term ends. But on Wednesday, Duterte said running for vice president is a sensible idea as he has yet to fulfill many of his campaign promises.
There are a lot of people pushing me to run for vice president. It's a good idea, I think. Particularly if we talk about the drug problem. Until now, billion, araw-araw billion, ang, hindi na million, billion na ang inaunuli. Well, I'm scared. I am not worried. I'm scared for the next generation. Pero ano, vice president, wala yan. It's just a flower there until the other wilt. Marami pang iba na hindi ko nagawa. I promised about four things. Corruption, I'm doing it. I'm firing people left and right. Sa gobyerno. Then I promised criminality. I think that medyo bumaba na ang crimes against the people. Ang isa pa yung droga at yung, well, the others itong to pursue other infrastructure projects. Yun ang naiwanan ko. Hindi ko magawa at hindi ko nakontrolado.
But Duterte also said he would honor his promise to support his political ally, House Majority Leader Martin Romualdez, if the latter decides to run for the vice presidency. Senator Coco Pimentel tells party mates fielding candidates outside PDP Laban for the 2022 polls to take a hike. That's amid an apparent infighting among party members on who should be their standard bearer for next year. Pimentel, the executive vice chairman of the country's ruling party, says most of those swing discord make that most of those sowing discord within the PDP Laban are new members who only joined when President Duterte won in 2016.
Those who are really more loyal to someone from outside the party, my question to them is, you know, rather than dividing the party, you know, making it suffer in its reputation and credibility, why don't you just follow your idol? Your idol already has his or her own vehicle or political party, so join that political party rather than be a traitor inside PDP Laban.
Meanwhile, Pimentel believes party president Senator Manny Pacquiao remains their strongest presidential bet.
It seems that he has been preparing for this possibility. He has many ideas and he has been explaining his ideas, his program of government. This is what we need. This is the leader that we need, the president that we need. Number one, who has a plan for the country, who has the right heart, no heart. It's time to look at the heart, eh? And the three, the support, the widespread enough support from the people.
Philippine Police Chief General Guillermo Eleazar warns vote buying may go digital in the lead up to the 2022 polls. That's amid the surge in e-wallet transactions this pandemic. Eleazar admits this will make the monitoring of vote buying activities a great challenge to authorities. The Election Commission says it is ready to work with the police to address this issue.
We've been saying as much for the longest time. I mean, ever since people started using e-wallets, we've seen that potential. Fighting this, I mean, addressing this issue isn't something that any one of our agencies can actually do by itself. It'll have to be a common effort.
Meanwhile, the Poll Commission is bracing for a surge in registrations for next year's elections. That's after its mobile registration app saw over 100,000 downloads just 3 days after it was launched. The app digitalizes the first step of registration, the filling up of application forms. But people still need to go to their local COMELEC offices to complete the process. COMELEC spokesperson James Jimenez assures the public the app is safe to use.
All it really does is it takes your data and generates a QR code from it. Once the QR code has been generated, the data you entered basically disappears. That's it. It's not stored, it's not saved, and therefore it cannot be hacked. The use of the app itself is offline, so there is no possibility of the data being intercepted in any way. When you scan the QR code from your phone into the COMELEC office, all it does is it generates a printout of that information. Again, once the data has been printed out, the data disappears.
The mobile registration app is only currently available in 500 cities across the Philippines. COMELEC says pilot testing in Metro Manila may begin this July. As the Philippine government moving closer to ditching its face shield mandate on Wednesday, the health department said face shields may be removed when outdoors. Later that day, President Rodrigo Duterte said face shields should only be worn in hospitals. The chief executive made that statement in a meeting with lawmakers in Malacañang. Health Secretary Francisco Duque III earlier rejected calls to drop the face shield mandate, noting the policy is backed by science. The Philippines Pandemic Task Force urged to shorten the required quarantine period for fully vaccinated overseas Filipino workers. Labor Secretary Silvestre Beru III says this is to allow vacationing OFWs to spend more time with their families. Senator Panfilo Lacson, he's backing that appeal. He also stresses the need to make the country's health protocols responsive and sensible to further accelerate economic recovery. Under existing protocols, inbound travelers are required to undergo a 14-day quarantine. The Philippines' COVID-19 death toll tops 23,000. That's after the health department recorded 158 new deaths Wednesday. Over 5,000 new cases were reported, bringing the total number of infections nationwide to 1,332,000. Active cases are at 56,000. The region with the highest positivity rate is Region 4B, followed by Regions 12 and 2. Well, can the Philippines afford to ease quarantine restrictions and its face shield mandate? Joining us now is infectious disease expert Dr. Ronjean Solante from the San Lazaro Hospital in Manila. Dr. Solante, welcome to the program. Thanks again for joining us today.
Hi, Camina. Good afternoon.
All right. Two things we want to talk to you about. First, the face shield mandate. The president said use them only in hospitals. But what do you say, based on your expertise, can we afford to ditch the face shield mandate?
At this point in time of our pandemic, there's still a lot of this community transmission. I totally disagree of ditching the face shield and only using it in healthcare setting like the hospitals. There are several advantages of this face shield. One is that it protects our eyes from getting the infected. And at the same time, it's an added layer of protection aside from your face mask. And there are situations in the community. If this allows protection in the healthcare setting, then this can also be an important protection with ongoing community transmission, like in closed spaces, those in crowded places, and if you cannot practice close contact. So these are the three important scenarios where you need to have the face shield as an added protection.
Well, because of what the president said, only use face shields when in hospitals. What are your expectations, or what do you think is going to happen? Will this lead to a spike in COVID-19 cases?
This may not be a primary cause of the lead-in spike, but it may be, it can contribute, especially with the relaxation now of the quarantine policy, with more people going out and indoor activities are also encouraged.
There's another thing that I wanted to talk to you about, the easing of quarantine restrictions for returning OFWs. They're saying give them more time to spend with their families, shorten the quarantine stay. What are your thoughts on that? What does science say?
Yeah, so if you are a fully vaccinated individual, that doesn't exempt you from getting the infection. Although your rate of getting the infection is lower and your risk also transmitting the infection is a bit lower compared to unvaccinated, but it's still the same as that with unvaccinated. If you are unvaccinated and you were exposed, you may have the virus. You don't have the symptom, but you have the virus. You go to your household earlier than the 14 days, there's a possibility. The risk there is exposing those who are highly vulnerable, those with comorbidities, rather than those healthy individuals. And that puts them, again, higher risk of developing symptoms and more severe infection.
Mm. So given these two ideas now that are being floated, how do you think this is going to help or affect the very fragile COVID situation here in the country? I mean, rightly so, you have people in government saying, we need this. That's going to help in further easing up, further reopening the economy. But there is a very delicate balance there, Dr. Solante.
Yeah, I don't see the logic there. You can ease in terms of more people, more openings in the establishment, but you can ease these very important protective measures, including the 14-day quarantine. Remember, we are still dealing with the virus. The virus characteristic hasn't changed. Even if there are cases, our cases are going down, that doesn't change, and it can still spike. Experience with other countries like UK, which has a very nice vaccination program, they still experience surge because of not only variant-driven, but also the behavior of people in terms of the practice of this health protocol. So I don't think we need to relax on this. We can relax on some of this policy, but these are some of the measures that we can stop or prevent the cycle of transmission of the infection.
Especially since our vaccination rollout hasn't really caught up. It hasn't really been that much. It's merely drop in the bucket if we talk about the target of 70 million, Dr. Sunat.
Yeah. Given the fact that our vaccination rollout or those vaccines that are coming in is not that we expected it. No? But again, if we're going to focus on those who are highly admissible and will develop severe infection, we're talking about the A2 and the A3. And this is already an opportunity to really pull in those population to have the vaccine, because we already knew that based on previous surge of cases, why the hospitals are fully occupied, these are the people with comorbidities, those who are 60 years old and above, that are admitted because of severe infection. So if there are low numbers of these vaccines available, then we have to prioritize and we really have to encourage our A2 and A3 over that of the other population.
Well, talking about a surge in cases, let's talk about Bicol now, Dr. Solante. Some of them are saying they're afraid that they might just be the next India. They're struggling at this point, Dr. Solante. What do you think, what interventions do you think are needed at this point in Bicol?
So one is ramping up the vaccination program in that area so that for those who are high risk for being admitted in the hospital should get the protection as soon as possible. Second is early diagnosis, especially for those individuals who are also at risk for getting the severe infection. So the community, the medical community should work hand in hand, double time, including the Department of Health, to look for cases, contact tracing, isolation. And for those with symptoms, they need to be in contact with their doctors, either telemedicine or hospital. So that's very important now is, number one, we have to reduce further transmission. Number two, if they are symptomatic and will be brought to the hospital, we have to decrease their risk of getting more severe COVID or death.
Dr. Salante, is it a foregone conclusion that at the rate we're going, that we're just going to have to grin and bear it and face the cycle of surges that are going to happen? Because we haven't gotten to that point yet where in our vaccination rollout is steady.
Yeah, actually, that's what I was thinking about, that the vaccination rate in some of these regions where we have experienced already surge of cases is still very low. And as long as not enough of the population is inoculated, protected, then we always have this cycle of surge and then control because of lockdown and then another surge, something like that.
All right. I want to zero in now on the virus itself. What is the latest? What is happening out there? Is it possible that the virus, its mutation has plateaued? Has the virus developed or mutated even further, that it's now become even more virulent and deadlier?
Yeah. If you look at the data in terms of tracking all of these continents or nations with the increasing cases, these are all the most countries now are dominated by the variants of concern. Like, for example, in UK, it's more on the B117, and an upsurge of the Indian variant. In the US, it's the B117. And in some Asian countries, it's half between the B117 and the Indian variant. No? So the original variant is not anymore existent in most of these countries with increasing cases. So it's a variant-driven increase in surge of cases, and I think that's something that we need to really protect our country, that entry of this variant can be a possible cause of another surge. Second, we need to ramp up vaccination, especially the A2 and the A3, because the higher the risk that they can also be admitted, especially now that there are data that with the B117 in UK are associated with more hospital admissions.
Mm. How would you describe, as a final question, Dr. Salante, how would you describe how fragile the COVID situation here in the country is at this point?
Well, after almost 1 year of the experience here in the medical setting, more or less the way we manage this, we are prepared and we are ready. It's just a matter of really how big the surge is in terms of capacity of most of the hospitals, because that's where the bottleneck in terms of the admission. If we have more of the cases and less of the hospital facility to accommodate the admitted patients.
Okay, we're going to have to leave it at that. Dr. Ronchin Salante, as always, thanks for joining us today. Thanks for everything that you do. Continue to keep safe. Take care.
Thank you, Carmen.
A new batch of Chinese-made Sinovac vaccines arrived in the Philippines Thursday. The latest shipment was composed of 1.5 million doses. This batch, though, will still need a certificate of analysis before being distributed to local government units. Sinovac is currently the most widely used COVID-19 vaccine in the Philippines. An advisor of President Duterte says more vaccines for the private sector are arriving in the coming months. This as more members of the A4 priority group become eager to get inoculated. Let's get details from Alvin El Chico.
While security guard Michael Tabon is excited to take the Sinovac vaccine ordered by his company, his fellow worker Mary Ann Agabao remains hesitant on taking the jab against COVID-19.
Para lang po sa ano sir, protection para lang po sa sarili, pamilya. Po, kasi po araw-araw po akong bumibiyahe. Marami pong makasalamuhang tao.
Ayoko po kasi natatakot po ako eh. Sa ngayon po, siguro makakapag-antay naman po. Pag napatunayan na pong effective at mabisa po yung vaccine, so saka po ako magpapabakuna.
The first ever private sector purchased vaccine will arrive Thursday morning in Manila. Filipino-Chinese businessmen paid more than 300 million pesos for the 500,000 doses of Sinovac vaccines. Speaking on behalf of the group, Ambassador Francis Chua says the Filipino-Chinese Federation is willing to order more if there is a need.
We are open. Sino pa man may gusto, we are welcome to come to the Federation anytime. Just register and say that they are willing to pay for the employee.
Meanwhile, San Miguel Corporation has started vaccinating its workers using vaccines provided by the national government. 500 workers were inoculated Wednesday in La Salle Gym as part of government's vaccination program. Though the company targets to inoculate its 70,000-strong workforce, San Miguel has been deploying medical staff to help out at vaccination sites in various cities.
Itong COVID, walang pinipili ito. Kanya lahat tayo kailangan magpavaksin. Kahit ano pong vaccine, i-take natin, huwag na ho tayo mamili. At pag nag-vaccine ho tayo, sigurado safe ang ating pamilya.
Another group of businessmen is awaiting the arrival of AstraZeneca vaccines by mid-August. Over 1 million doses are expected by July 14, of which more than 400,000 doses will be shared with several local government units. The quantity will be given back to the private sector once the LGU vaccine purchase arrives.
Rather than just keep all the doses in the storage, we are allowing them to use it already. We discussed it and I said that let's help the second batch and the LGU on the prorata of their order. Para pwede rin sila start, they can start already as early as July.
Concepcion confirms another group of businessmen will get their Moderna vaccine order this month, followed by the second batch of AstraZeneca in August or September. Meanwhile, private orders of Novavax and Covaxin, according to Concepcion, face delays due to the export ban in India. Alvin Olchico, ABS-CBN News.
Quezon City launches its nighttime COVID-19 vaccination drive for workers, dubbed QC Bakuna Nights. The nighttime vaccination began Wednesday. Around 2,000 economic frontliners were inoculated. The initiative is for residents who cannot leave their jobs to get vaccinated during work hours. The Indian government defends its decision to double the gap between the first and second dose of AstraZeneca's COVID-19 vaccine. And as this report tells us, that move was not approved by its national immunization experts.
India's government is defending its decision to increase the gap between the two doses of the AstraZeneca COVID-19 vaccine to up to 16 weeks. That's twice its former length of time, and comes after three scientific advisers said there was no agreement on such a wide interval. Reuters reported on Tuesday that the government had increased the gap last month without the approval of the scientific group that it says recommended the move, citing three members of the body. It's known as the National Technical Advisory Group on Immunization. In multiple statements on Wednesday, the government said that the interval was increased based on scientific evidence. AstraZeneca accounts for nearly 90% of the doses administered in India. And according to the minutes of a meeting by the advisory group held on May 28th, data from Britain showed 65 to 88% protection after the first dose if the gap was up to 12 weeks. But NTAGI members had told Reuters that the group had no data concerning the effects of a gap beyond that time. A member of the COVID working group told Reuters on Tuesday that there had been discussions within the NTAGI on increasing the vaccine dosage interval, but that the body had not specifically recommended 12 to 16 weeks. The NTAGI working group said the decision to expand the gap had been made to provide flexibility to those who may not be able to get the second dose at 12 weeks.
We're going to take a break now. Coming up, we'll talk with the Philippine Nurses Association for their thoughts on the possible deployment of more Filipino healthcare workers abroad. Dateline Philippines will be right back. Stay with us here on ANC. And we are back. You're still with Dateline Philippines here on ANC. Here's another look at our headlines this noon. President Duterte hints at possibly running for vice president next year. The Philippines' police chief warns of digital vote buying in the upcoming elections. President Duterte wants face shields used only in hospitals. An infectious diseases specialist, however, says it's not yet time to drop the mandate. And Manila's labor chief backs the deployment of more Filipino healthcare workers abroad. Back with more news, Manila's Labor Secretary backs the deployment of more healthcare workers overseas. Secretary Silvestre Bello III said he will ask for government approval to allow 5,000 more health workers to be deployed abroad. This would double the country's annual 5,000 cap. It was imposed to ensure the country would have enough health workers as it battles with the pandemic. At least 4,000 nurses set to work in Germany, the Middle East, the U.S., and Australia were barred from leaving the Philippines after the cap was breached earlier this month. Well, let's get a reaction on this from Melbert Reyes. He's the president of the Philippine Nurses Association. Melbert, good afternoon to you, and thank you for joining us today.
Good afternoon, Casey.
All right, so let's talk about this. How welcome is this for the sector that you have the labor chief backing the deployment of more healthcare workers abroad, Melbert?
You know, we believe that we cannot deprive nurses from looking for better opportunities, and they cannot find it here in our country. But then we are worried with the gap, you know, presented by the Department of Health, that we might be losing more nurses, and it will be a problem to different healthcare institutions in our hospitals, for they are having a large gap of employment or having this problem of nursing shortage.
Yes, exactly. Because, you know, I've been talking to some chief executives, and there's one in particular that said that they have actually increased the salary that they were offering nurses, for example, and other healthcare workers, but there are no takers. Why is this so? Can you explain this to us? What is happening in the sector as we speak?
Probably it is, number one, it is the value that they are giving to nurses. Number two, it is not comparative to the salary offered by the different countries, no, specifically our nearby countries here in Asia. No. Number three, it's the position, because nurses are offered the position like job orders and contractuals that do not have security of tenure. No. So the nurses, our nurses, our Filipino nurses, would not want, of course, to be hired without the security of tenure.
Mm-mm. Whereas when you look at other countries and the offers that they're getting, those offers tick all of these.
Yeah, definitely.
But so the concern now is, and you were the one who raised it, will there be enough left for the country?
There were lots of nurses in the Philippines, but they are well distributed. We have nurses outside the nursing field. We have nurses in the Department of Education, the Bureau of Corrections, Bureau of Fire, and the Bureau of yung PNP. No, napakarami nating nurses dyan. And as to numbers, we have lots of nurses. According to the PRC, we have at least 600,000 who are actively renewing their license, but we do not know exactly where these nurses are. No, mm-hmm. There are nurses kasi who are doctors, no, who are abroad. So we do not have exact numbers as to the number of nurses working in the different healthcare institutions in the Philippines. But definitely, it is some sort of 200,000 that created the large gap, no, that the current situations of healthcare institutions have this shortage for nurses.
Mm-mm. So how do you solve that? How do you bridge that gap?
We need to solve the root cause, no? To the government agency, it is not the temporary suspension, the deployment cap that entice our nurses or encourage our nurses to work here in the Philippines, in different hospitals in the Philippines. But we need to address the gap. No? We need to address the main problem, and that is the value that we are giving to nurses, the salary, a comparative salary across the world, no? So that the nurses would choose to work here in the Philippines. No, nobody wants to be away from their family, no, just to earn money and for a living. No, mm-hmm. So if the Philippines can give it to Filipino nurses, then definitely we will not have problems like this.
When you talk to your constituents, Melbert, ano bang pakiramdam nila? Do they still want to stay here? Are many really looking to go abroad? Because also the fact that they were also victims of this pandemic in more ways than one.
Casey, alam mo, halo-halo yung aming emosyon dito sa mga usaping ito. No? Kasi in times of pandemic, parang it's very difficult na para i-encourage ang nurses to work for Filipino people. Parang pandemic ngayon and then yet, yung ating mga nurses are really wanted to go abroad and look for better opportunities. Filipinos, our countrymen, no, look up to nurses as like we are compared as angels and heroes, but we are human beings too. We have the same needs as to other health professionals and other professionals here in the Philippines. So dapat din natin unawain ang nurses may pangangailangan upang buhayin ang kanilang sariling pamilya. Kaya naman, it might be a welcome development for this deployment, but then nakakalungkot din kasi na baka naman pagdating ng panahon, tayo naman ang mabuhusan ng mga nurses na mag-aalaga sa kapwa natin Pilipino.
Yun nga ang fear, di ba? Na baka maubusan tayo. So, tingin mo ba, you know, when you talk to your constituents, napapunta doon or hindi naman?
Alam mo, kahit hindi sila mag-abroad, papunta doon, Casey. Kasi kung titingnan natin, bakit may mga nurses na pipiliing magtrabaho sa call center, na piniling magtrabaho sa call center, na pipiliing magtrabaho sa Department of Education, not as a nurse but as a teacher, bakit maraming nagtsatsaga na maging bumbero pero lisensyadong nurse sila? Diba? Kahit hindi natin tingnan yung deployment, marami tayong nurses, no, registered nurses who do not choose to be a nurse because doon sa mga factors na sinabi natin kanina.
But you know, Melbert, when you talk about this problem, it's not as if these problems cropped up overnight. Matagal na panahon na natin alam ang ganitong klaseng problema. Why do you think that to this day, all the factors that you mentioned are still there and have not been addressed?
Because those who are involved, maybe the government, do not take it seriously. Our Republic Act 9173, the Nursing Act, stated, no, even when it was crafted in 2002, that nurses should receive salary grade 15, no, amounting to 33,000 now. But why did it not happen into reality, di ba? Hindi siya ibinigay since 2002. Just so happened, napaburan siya ng Supreme Court in 2019. Doon lang siya nagsimulang bigyan, no, ng pansin. But then, during the implementation, there are lots of problems arises. Nagkaroon ng demotion, di ba? Nagkaroon ng mga poor implementation of it na nire-reklamo ng ating mga nurses. So ang bottom line dito ay hindi talaga nakikita yung halaga naming mga nurses dito sa kung yung aming role, no, as an important or vital player in the healthcare institutions. Kasi kung nakikita nila yung halaga namin, Casey, ibibigay nila yung karapat dapat para sa nurses.
And talking about giving you what is due you, in the early days of the pandemic, marami tayong narinig, di ba? Susuong kayo sa gera and therefore dapat may hazard pay at kung ano-ano pang dapat na dagdag na benepisyo. Kamusta na yon? Are you getting what is due you in the middle of this pandemic as you continue to wage war against the virus?
Some received it already, but there are lots of nurses who do not receive this SRA and advanced duty hazard pay. Yung iba nga
Why?
Because of the implementation, sabi ng Department of Health, no, it was the budget was downloaded into the local government units, but then it was not given yet, and we do not know why, diba? So yung iba naman, the additional for this year, na ang problem is nasa DBM. The DBM is not released, did not release yet the budget.
Ang nakaka, you know, something that, you know, I've observed as well is, and correct me if I'm wrong, kahit may ganito kayong mga daing, kahit ganito yung mga punan ninyo, kahit maraming dapat nasa sa inyo na hindi naman napupunta sa inyo, because you are working still in the middle of this pandemic, meron ba kayong panahon para sabihin nito, mag-file ng complaint, ipaglaban kung ano yung dapat na nararapat para sa inyo?
Yeah, so tama yun, ano, yun yung kulang sa mga nurses. We are not assertive of our pleading for our rights, ano. So hindi namin masyado, no? Parang hindi yan, it's not our cup of tea, no? Na regardless kung may nare-receive or wala, patuloy pa rin magsiservisyo ang ating mga nurses kasi yun yung sinumpa natin. Service-oriented kasi ang nursing professions, and then therefore, hindi masyado yung ganyang i-raise yung concerns, etc. No? So siguro by this time, we should not be silent anymore. No, dapat siguro marinig na kami para naman maibigay sa amin kung ano yung dapat na para sa amin. No.
And just as a final question, Melbert, before we let you go, kamusta na kayo? I mean, a lot of we've been asking people how they're doing. We've been, you know, asking our friends how they're doing, family members and all that, but I want to ask you now, how are the nurses doing? How are you coping more than a year into the pandemic?
Nurses continues to serve, no, regardless of different problems that they are facing now, because yung mga nurses naman kasi natin talagang they are kumbaga pinalaki sila diyan, no, kumbaga yun yung training ng mga nurses natin, no, so they continuously serve, no, regardless of yung mga problems they are encountering, yung mga pagpapahalaga, yung values na yan na hindi na ibibigay sa kanila kasi kung hindi gagawin ng ating mga nurses, ng ating mga Filipino nurses, sino pong gagawa? Wala namang iba kung hindi, di ba, tayo din ng mga Filipino nurses. No? Sino mag-aalaga sa kapwa natin Filipino? Kung hindi, yung ating mga nurses din. No? As far as our jurisdiction is concerned.
Okay, we're going to have to leave it at that. Melbert Reyes, President of the Philippine Nurses Association. Thanks for all that you do. Continue to keep safe and take care. Ingat po. Right, from there, the Court of Appeals reverses the acquittal of a police officer in the Maguindanao massacre case, citing the misapprehension of facts. Mike Navalu now joins us for the details. Mike.
Hi, Carmina. A police officer who was initially left out on the list of those acquitted in the Maguindanao massacre ruling has now been convicted by the Court of Appeals. The name of senior police officer Tu Badawi Bakal was not included in names of those convicted and acquitted in the 2019 Maguindanao massacre ruling rendered by Quezon City Regional Trial Court 221 Judge Jocelyn Solis Reyes. Instead, the name of another accused, Police Superintendent Banarin Kamaong, appeared both on the list of those convicted as well as of those acquitted. Bakal sought clarification when Kamaong asked to be released. Solis Reyes, in a March 2020 omnibus order, denied Kamaong's motion for immediate release, clarifying that he was convicted and that it was in fact Bakal who should have been indicated as among those acquitted. The court said Bakal only manned a checkpoint through which the Mangudadato convoy never passed through. That convoy of 58 people, including 32 journalists, was ambushed by armed men led by Andal Unsay Ampatuan Jr. in November 2009. Bodies of 57 people, including the wife and two sisters of then gubernatorial candidate Ismael Mangudadato, were found riddled with bullets, mutilated and buried in a shallow mass grave. On December 2019, members of the Ampatuan clan, led by brothers Zalvi and Andal Unsay and several others, were sentenced up to 40 years in prison. But the omnibus order of Solis Reyes, which clarified that historic ruling, was questioned by the court the Office of the Solicitor General before the Court of Appeals. In a decision released Monday, the CA Special 6th Division said Solis Reyes committed grave abuse of discretion in grossly misappreciating the facts. The CA said the facts showed Bakal had knowledge of the crime since he concealed the identities of the accused, failed to effect or cause the immediate arrest, and contributed to the delay in the investigation of the crime by threatening a witness. The CA found Bakal guilty of accessory and sentenced him to a jail time of between 4 years and 2 months to up to 10 years in prison for each of the 57 counts of murder. CA said this was an exception to the finality of acquittal rule and did not violate the rule against double jeopardy. The omnibus order with respect to Bakal being void, it could not become final and can still be amended. The Maguindanao massacre is considered the worst case of election-related violence in Philippine history and a single deadliest incident for journalists in the world. Carmina?
Thanks a lot, Mike Navalio there, joining us on the line. Take care, Mike. Keep safe. Moving on, three members of the Lumad Manobo community killed by the military in Lianga, Surigao del Sur. The victims include a 12-year-old girl. Rights group Karapatan said the military identified the victims as members of the Communist Party's armed wing, the New People's Army. The National Task Force to End Local Communist Armed Conflict, or NTF-LCAC, said the slain miner was used as a child warrior. The military adds it also rescued a miner being trained by the NPA during the operation. The families of the victims reject the military's claim. Overseas, Peruvian socialist candidate Pedro Castillo claimed victory against conservative bet Keiko Fujimori in the presidential election. More in this report.
A socialist candidate has claimed victory in Peru's presidential election, clinging to a narrow lead after the 9-day vote count ended. Pedro Castillo spoke to supporters in Lima Tuesday night.
Today, the Peruvian people have raised their heads to say that democratically we will save this fatherland, to say that democratically we are going to save this country. Vamos a salvar
este país. Castillo was 44,058 votes ahead of conservative candidate Keiko Fujimori. The abrupt rise of the 51-year-old former teacher has rattled Peru's political and business elite. Socialist Castillo galvanized rural and poorer voters who feel left behind in the country's economic growth.
We must reflect on your struggle, my struggle, and the struggle of the people to find solutions to the great problems of this country.
But Fujimori has yet to concede. Addressing supporters at a rally in downtown Lima on Tuesday, she pledged to keep fighting and defend Peru's democracy. She's made allegations of fraud with little evidence and tried to get some ballots annulled.
Confiamos en los órganos electorales, sí.
We trust the authorities, yes, but we trust more in the popular will. We know that when they analyze these irregularities, they will most likely give us the reason.
Castillo's Free Peru Party has rejected accusations of fraud, and international observers in Lima have stated that the elections were transparent.
U.S. President Joe Biden and Russian counterpart Vladimir Putin conclude their first summit, which both described as pragmatic rather than friendly. Recording small gains, the two leaders agreed to hold arms control and cybersecurity talks, but discord remains over human rights and Ukraine. The discussions lasted only 3 hours, but Biden says they were intense and detailed. Putin described the summit as constructive and without hostility.
President Putin and I had share a unique responsibility to manage the relationship between two powerful and proud countries. A relationship that has to be stable and predictable. And we should be able to cooperate where it's in our mutual interest. And where we have differences, I want President Putin to understand why I say what I say and why I do what I do. And how we'll respond to specific kinds of actions that harm America's interest.
In a joint statement, the two sides said the meeting showed they were able to make progress on shared goals, even in periods of tension. In business, the U.S. Federal Reserve moves up its timeline for policy tightening as the labor market continues to improve and inflation fears linger. The world's most powerful central bank says it sees at least 2 rate hikes in 2023. But for now, the Fed held its interest rates near zero, the same level it's been since March of 2020. Fed Chair Jerome Powell adds policymakers will soon begin discussions about scaling back bond purchases used to support financial markets and the U.S. economy during the pandemic.
The economy has clearly made progress, although we are still a ways from our goal of substantial further progress. Participants expect continued progress ahead toward that objective. Liftoff is well into the future. The conditions for liftoff were very far from maximum employment, for example. It's a consideration for the future. So the near-term thing is really – the real near-term discussion that will begin is really about the path of asset purchases. The pandemic continues to pose risks to the economic outlook. Progress on vaccinations has limited the spread of COVID-19 and will likely continue to reduce the effects of the public health crisis on the economy.
Overall, the Fed sees the U.S. economy growing 7% this year, up from its initial 6.5% growth projection. But it also raised its inflation forecast for 2021 to 3.4% from 2.4% after consumer price pressures have proven hotter than expected over the last 2 months. But the price increases were still described as transitory.
As these transitory supply effects abate, inflation is expected to drop back toward our longer-run goal, and the median inflation projection falls from 3.4% this year to 2.1% next year and 2.2% in 2023. Longer-term inflation expectations remain well anchored at 2%. We expect to maintain an accommodative stance of monetary policy until these employment and inflation outcomes are achieved.
The privately led National Grid Corporation of the Philippines will hold a competitive public bidding for ancillary services as ordered by the government. Ancillary services serve as backups when the NGCP's regular power service providers are unable to keep up with demand. The NGCP president and CEO, Anthony Almeida, says the move will help the energy department meet its objectives and secure the best value for power consumers. But he maintains procuring ancillary services on either firm or non-firm basis is not a solution to the recurring brownouts in the country. He notes government needs to develop new energy sources as existing power facilities age and outputs decline. In sports, the Philippines' national basketball team, Gilas Pilipinas, books its ticket to the FIBA Asia Cup thanks to a Hail Mary shot. Guard S.J. Belanghel drained the game-winning three-pointer at the buzzer as Gilas edged South Korea 81-78 in the FIBA Asia Cup qualifiers. Belanghel faked off his defender, then sidestepped his way to a twisting three-point attempt that banked in. The Nationals needed just one win in their last three games in the qualifiers to earn a spot in the FIBA Asia Cup to be held in Indonesia. The game also marked the debut of NBA prospect Kai Soto for the men's team. He finished with 11 points and 7 rebounds. The Atlanta Hawks complete one of the greatest comebacks in NBA playoff history. The Hawks erased a 26-point deficit to beat the 76ers in Game 5 of their series, 109-106, in front of shocked fans in Philadelphia. The Sixers were still up by 18 at the start of the fourth quarter and by 10 with just over 4 minutes remaining. That's when the Hawks unleashed a 15-2 endgame run to steal the victory. Trae Young went berserk with 39 points and 7 assists, while former Sixer Lou Williams added 15 points off the bench. Atlanta can advance to the Eastern Conference Finals with another win at home in Game 6 this Friday. Charlotte Hornets rising star LaMelo Ball wins NBA Rookie of the Year after an impressive first year in the league. Ball received 84 first-place votes to easily beat a top pick Anthony Edwards of the Minnesota Timberwolves for the honor. Ball averaged nearly 16 points and 6 rebounds plus 6 assists per game. He single-handedly turned the Hornets into an exciting playoff-caliber team with his stellar court vision. Ball is the third player in Hornets history to win the Rookie of the Year award. But remember billionaire Jeff Bezos' scheduled trip to space next month? Well, more than 10,000 people have now signed a petition blocking the Amazon CEO from ever returning to Earth. The Change.org petition says billionaires like Bezos should not exist, comparing him to Superman's arch enemy Lex Luthor with his supposed plan for world domination. While Bezos is known as a tech innovator, he's also heavily criticized for alleged unjust labor practices at Amazon. Bezos is set to go on an 11-minute space ride in July on a reusable rocket launched by his company Blue Origin. Medical frontliners in the Philippines get first dibs on the much-awaited McDonald's BTS meal. Over 2,000 limited-edition McDonald's BTS meals were distributed to select hospitals and vaccination hubs Wednesday ahead of the launch for the general public. McDonald's Philippines says the gesture is its way of honoring the hard work and sacrifice of health workers amid the COVID-19 pandemic. The fast food chain will release the BTS meal at branches all over the country this Friday. And that'll do it for today. Thank you for joining us. I'm Pravina Constantino. If you want to revisit today's episode, Dateline Philippines podcast is on Spotify and Apple Podcasts. Playback this newscast too on ANC's YouTube channel and on ANC 24/7 on Facebook. Keep safe. Keep it here on ANC.